The spoiled broth does not support Banksy.
Hello everyone, we're back.
We're back, baby.
And welcome to the second episode of The Spoiled Broth. I'm Yahaira Brito-Morfe and I'm here with...
Jemima Vaughan. Hello.
Yeah. It's your usual podcast host of The Spoiled Broth, because that's how a podcast works.
Yeah. The podcast hasn't changed. We're the same people.
No.
Unfortunately for you.
Yeah. Maybe you all dislike that a lot, but sorry. We're still here. In today's episode, we're going to discuss the hardships of being an artist and the current situation with Brexit. Some positive news stuff that I want to share with you before we get into all of our cool conversation topics this week, episode thing, are thank you all for listening. We had like a super great response, I think. Almost 150 streams, which is insane.
Yeah, it's honestly, I felt like such a pop star because we managed to get our podcast approved on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Amazon, I think. We sold our souls to Jeff Bezos.
Hell yeah. For our listeners on Apple Podcasts, or if you have Apple Podcasts on your phone or laptop, please give us a 5-star review. Not even a 5-star review, just give us a review, because feedback's nice too, but we would like to have a 5-star review so we can grow.
A 5-star would be nice.
Also a big thank you to, because we forgot to do that last time, to Brian Murphy, who is making our jingle, and who's also helping with the technical difficulties of this podcast from time to time.
Brian is our music producer, essentially.
Yeah.
And a good friend of the pod.
Yeah, a good friend of the pod who gives weird feedback on our audio. Just so you know, if you like our jingle and you want a jingle for yourself, for your own podcast, you can...
You want to make your whole life into a sitcom show?
And I think we should also thank Nathan, who has been kind enough to listen and feedback our podcast before it aired and tell us what we could do better and... whatnot. And also, oh,
this is very wholesome that you're shouting out Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, he has been helping us a lot. Yeah. It's like he has been giving us really good feedback, helping us find out which podcast platform is the cheapest, yada yada yada. Yeah.
So, thank you to Nathan and thank you to Brian. We love hooray you
for the friends of the pod.
Yeah, in case you thought that me and Yahaira were like independent strong women, you were incorrect. We're not.
We also love support from our partners who happen to be guys.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Sorry about it. And also just thank you to everyone who listened to the podcast, like all of our friends and anyone else. It's really like made us feel very, very special that we had so many listens on a serious note. And yeah, it's just been so nice that so many people are engaging with the podcast. So thank you so much for listening.
And all the interesting discussions that came. Like, I really enjoyed that everyone felt free enough to hit us up and have conversations with us about topics that we discussed in our previous podcast. That was really nice.
My whole world was shaken up this week because... So right now I'm in Glasgow and I'm studying in Glasgow, and our studio time was previously one day a week, which is ridiculous, but it's been now cut down to nothing.
Nice. So this boils down to the fact that every art school is the same and they all suck.
Yeah, art schools all suck, but they all suck on varying scales. So like other places in the UK are still abiding by like government regulations, obviously with coronavirus, like nothing is as it normally is. But other schools in the UK are doing way better and having way more studio time, whereas the Glasgow School of Art, which is where I'm at, has only been allowing us to have one day a week, whereas other Scottish art schools have been having like 3 days a week. It's really ridiculous. And
why?
Yeah.
Also,
I think it's just because they're struggling and they're just trying to cover it up and be like, we're doing what's safest for our students. But I think in reality, what's happening is really they're just trying to save some money by closing the studios. Yeah, it's really awful.
Smart
moves. We're all paying
money undermined.
Sneaky money. They're making money moves. But yeah, much to the expense of all the students who are paying like $9,000 a year for Jesus. Nothing.
I have kind of the same thing. Not like with the studio time, because obviously I don't study at art school because I don't like
art schools.
Because
you're not an idiot.
Exactly, I'm not an idiot. Although I'm still like constantly thinking, oh, after this study, I might go back to art academy. Yay! Because I'm an idiot. But I pay $2,000 for a year, which is not that much in the grand scheme of, I mean, it is much, let's not lie about it, but like in the grand scheme of things of other schools, it's not that much. We don't have any offline moments, so I'm constantly at home, like literally 7 days a week I'm at home, unless I go visit a friend, which I also don't try to do that much. And like I have 2 or 3 friends that I visit, which then really limits the amount of time that you can go to them. And I kind of feel like, so I'm spending all this money on an education, which of like the money also gives me the privilege of going on campus, but I'm not allowed to go on campus. So why am I spending this money?
That's exactly how we all feel as well. Like we're still paying the full amount, but we're getting like a quarter of the time.
Yeah.
Like even less than a quarter, like 1 day in the studio a week. We have no access to
And I think they should like
facilities.
Do some compromising. For example, like I thought
definitely
it would be less painful if, for example, art academies, but also my study, offered you something in return after Corona, such as, I don't know, an internship somewhere good, or like an exhibition in an actual exhibition space, or whatever, like something that makes up the fact that you could not use all the facilities.
I mean, I just want some money back, honestly, especially right now, because we have no studio access at all.
Weirdos. Yeah.
There is definitely some sneaky bad behavior going on there.
Sneaky, sneaky stuff. It's not fair. It's not really fair. What else has happened?
What's been happening in my week? I mean, I spent a good deal of today coding a website.
Wow.
I'm trying to, it's not that impressive. It's just like I'm trying to convert my Tumblr that I've had for years into more of like a portfolio website. I did previously have a website just for my art, but like it's one of those things where when you're a starting artist, it's like, is there any point me paying like €50 a year to have a real domain website that nobody's gonna click on?
True.
Like I might as well just work on my art. And to be honest, I think there needs to stop being this like snobbery around having, I don't know,
a website
that's like got a Tumblr domain or like got a blog domain, you know, like if you're just a little artist, like maybe you don't need to have your own domain. It's like,
no, definitely. I also think like, because for example, I've had this conversation with Brian's mom, who's also an artist. And she has a website and an Instagram account and all that stuff. But she was, like, complaining about the fact that she doesn't know why she's paying for it, because she never actually gets, like, any reaction from the website. So, for example, no one emails her because they found her website or because they were looking at her website. And she's kind of, like, contemplating how important it is. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, but the moment that you don't have a website, people are going to be like, oh, so you don't have a website.
Yeah, it's almost just like something that you have on your professional tick list where it's like, it's not really that valuable. But like, I think people engage way more on other websites, like Instagram, for example. But
yeah.
But it doesn't seem very professional to show people your Instagram. So it's like, that's why I need a website, just so I can look professional.
Cool. Professional money moves.
Yeah, I've got my business boots on.
I lost my business boots.
No.
Did I tell you?
Oh, I loved your business boots.
Yeah, man, I lost them. I'm so sorry.
How did
I
you lose?
I lost them at a party. Uh-oh. I was really drunk at a party.
Oh, no.
Like, this is also, like, months ago, because we're not allowed to have parties anymore. But I was at a party.
Yeah, I feel like you've just, like, I'm glad that was months ago, because you, like, otherwise just, like, revealed yourself.
Hmm? Yeah, no. It was months ago. It was a Cowboys and...
Oh, I know about this. But I didn't know.
Yeah, it was
you...
a Cowboys party.
Well, maybe yeah, I forgot. So... Maybe the event was so tragic that I blocked out that you lost your business boots. I was so heartbroken.
Well, no, I at first I didn't think I lost them. I thought I just forgot them there. But then I forgot about them being there. And now months have passed and I'm kind of like, yeah, as if they're keeping some rando girl's shoes there. Like,
maybe they're wearing
probably
them.
Probably not. I hope so. That would be so cool. It's like a bunch of guys from the Design Academy living in that house.
Oh, they're definitely wearing them then.
Yeah, probably. But it's like a tiny size. I don't have really big feet. So the business boots is actually an old story. What has been happening? Had some uncomfortable conversations in class about race. But it was fine eventually. Was uncomfortable at the moment. Been to Amsterdam. Mm.
What are you getting up to in Amsterdam?
Well, since like all of my classmates live there, so I was watching a movie with some of my classmates because I was like, I really want to see you guys. I went for a movie, was fun, got flashed by the bus driver.
What?
No, that's not how you say that in English. I got...
What happened? What did the bus driver do to you?
Nothing. No, as
it was
in like...
so casual, the way that you said yeah. that. I got flashed by the bus driver.
I forgot that flashing also means like showing your fucking private parts. I forgot, I'm sorry.
And what does it mean in...
Well, in Dutch, sometimes you say like, ik werd geflashed. And that could be like, we gotta cut this whole part out because...
No,
like,
this is... But, this is
no.
This is gonna
this
be
is
right
not
at the beginning of the podcast.
We got our episode title.
Got
flashed by the bus driver.
I'm so curious about how you're gonna explain that actually in Dutch you can say I got flashed.
So I had to take the bus in Amsterdam to go back to Central Station, and I was I left like a couple minutes earlier than that my phone said that I had to leave. Like the planner, time planner. So I went there and I was at the bus station like 2 minutes earlier, but I wasn't actually on the platform of the bus yet. I was like walking towards it, and then the bus came driving by, looking me in the eye, and then just kept driving. Yeah, never mind. I even want to explain this. He pulled a prank on me.
So he didn't show you his private parts.
No.
Okay, that's
he
good.
He did like look at me, and I screamed in the middle of the night. Like it was 11 o'clock or something, like in the evening.
Our podcast is becoming like a Amsterdam tourism information.
Anyways, so that meant that the next bus was coming in 15 minutes, and I wouldn't be in time. So I had to take like the slowest train there is back. So it took me 2 hours to get back home. It was trash. Aww. But I did have a lot of fun in Amsterdam with my classmates. Shout out to my classmates.
This is the shout out episode.
It is. Shout out to everyone.
Got any more shout outs?
No.
Okay.
I don't really have friends. Yeah, but that was basically what happened in my week. And now we're talking about Brexit and art professionals. Right?
I think that should be the segue. So now we're talking about our main topic for the episode, which is Brexit. And what does it mean for artists and for curators and museums and galleries? What does it mean? We don't know, but we're going to discuss it.
Oh, and I've been consuming a lot of like British media, Which is funny since we're going to talk about Brexit today.
Mm, yeah. What kind of British media have you been consuming?
So I've been like, I do listen a lot to British bands since like my mom raised me listening to punk music and new wave and shit. So most of the time that's British, because also my mom's like obsessed with Britain for some reason. She isn't, but like sort of. It's complicated. Don't know. It's just like she listens a lot to like British bands, and she had a boyfriend from Liverpool, and it kind of created a identity thing for her.
Oh.
Which is also why she was really excited when I started dating a guy from Liverpool. Yeah. Yeah, it was insane. She was actually so hyped, and then she found out that Brian was for the opposite team.
What, football team?
Yeah. Also, I've been listening to a couple of like British podcasts, also for this particular pod to get some information, because I'm not really aware of the situation in Britain. And then I had to like read and watch a lot of British centered stuff for school. So the last couple of weeks have just been like, whoa, huh, I forgot the UK is actually a country.
Mm.
And now it's basically completely like back in my mind. Living in
an ideal world. Like you were existing and thinking that Britain didn't exist. That's like,
exactly.
That's pretty ideal.
Cool, huh?
Yeah. I'm quite jealous.
No, when I was younger, I really wanted to live in the UK. Like, really wanted to live in the UK. I was like also crying about wanting to live in the UK.
That's don't so know why. Strange. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was like 12, depressed, thought my problems would go away if I lived in another country. And Britain was the one that I was fixated on for some reason. Now I sound like a weirdo, don't I?
Yeah.
I sound a bit crazy.
There's no easy way to say this, but yes, you sound like a weirdo.
I know. Actually, after like the Brexit vote, I kind of lost interest. Yeah, for some reason it just like didn't really matter that much anymore. Mm. And then I started being like kind of obsessed with America. I also think because like we're being so exposed to American media, but also American like politics, that it's really easy to slip into like being obsessed about America.
Growing up in the UK, you're kind of told that like, in education, you're told that the UK is the best country, and you're like kind of put against America a lot. Like you compare the UK to America quite a lot. And it's quite weird growing up as well, because I never really associated that much with being European. In the UK, often if you ask people like, how European do you feel? A lot of people are just like, oh, I don't class the UK as European. And like, everyone kind of feels quite separate from...
Maybe it's because you're an island.
Yeah, we are an island.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like...
Must suck not being part of mainland Europe.
It really does suck. I hate not being able to travel around so easily.
I get that.
Like, that's what I can't wait about going back to the Netherlands. Like, I can't wait to get on a train and be able to travel from one part of the country to another part of the country. And it's so easy.
Yeah, but also, like, go to Germany without, like, actually thinking about it.
Exactly. The weird thing with coronavirus and, like, the pandemic is that every kind of stress that we had about the world has kind of not disappeared, but it's just been dismissed a little bit because of how stressful this current situation is. For example, a couple of years ago, the main thing that I was stressed about, especially whilst I was living in the Netherlands, was Brexit. And I was so stressed about how that would affect me, and trying to get myself organized for that. And now that coronavirus has happened, I have basically forgotten that that is happening, even though it is definitely happening.
In like a month or something, right?
Yeah, so what's actually happened is Brexit has actually already happened. It happened like at the start of 2020, and then they went into a transition period. The transition period ends on the 1st of January 2021.
So we're like, when we're celebrating New Year, which will be not much of a celebration, probably.
Get them volleyballing now.
Yeah, I already had to. Yeah. I will be playing poker with my boyfriend's British family here in the Netherlands, celebrating the fact that the UK is officially no longer...
That's so mean.
I don't know. Yeah, they invited me over for poker. Oh, but then it's really happening. Weird.
Yeah.
Some weird stuff. So, I told you earlier, I've been looking into how I can still get into the UK.
Yeah, I've also been looking into, like, how is this going to affect being an artist and traveling.
Yeah, traveling, but also, like, I've been... Because I, after, like, you went to Glasgow School of Art, I have been also kind of, like, interested in your study because it sounds really cool.
And I'm just, like, now that I'm doing it and I'm telling you about what it's like, you're like, nah.
No, I'm still, like, not for cool. me. Nah, I'm just, like, because I really like printmaking. Don't really like painting, but, like, printmaking sounds really cool. And... I was just, like, wondering, like, the UK has some really good art schools and also some really good academia.
Definitely.
In general. And I want to do, like, an exchange thing, probably with America, but I don't want to, like, actually do a study there. So, like, an exchange would be fine, but studying wouldn't. I just don't want to study in America. Also... Education there is not really good, I think.
It's really expensive. I don't know.
It's really expensive, and I don't know if it's that much better than, for example, education I could get here. And then Brexit is happening, so it's not only, like, as an artist or as someone who wants to work in, like, the art sector, but just as a person, yeah. It's so complicated as a person who then wants to grow also within, like, because, like, Britain does play a big role, like, you can hate it, but you can't deny that Britain plays a big role in the arts and culture field as well. So yeah, but it is, like, these kind of subjects are just so tiring, because, like, am I ever, and this is so selfish, but, like, at the same time, I'm like, okay, but what if I want to work as a curator in one museum or thing in Britain, am I not allowed to do that anymore? Because they have this weird point system. You're gonna have a really weird point-based immigration system.
Yeah, I've written some notes on it. The point-based system is, like, specific work requirements, so you need an above minimum skill level. So essentially, if you're not highly educated, you're not welcome, which is really classist and awful. And you also have to have, like, a good command of the English language, which means, yeah, again, if you don't speak English very well, you can't come in.
So we read an article in artreview.com, which is called "The End of Creativity? ? What the UK's new immigration regime will do to the art world."
We have to limit ourselves to just talking about kind of how this affects, like, the arts and culture sector, because it's something that we're more knowledgeable on, I guess, and have experience. Mm. But some basic facts for you.
Hit me, because I'm confused.
The UK is currently in a transition period. They have officially done the Brexit, and... this means that they are no longer in the European Union.
Question. Are they allowed to, like, are they still... They're not in the European Parliament either now, right? So they're not...
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Nice to know.
And I think there were a lot of discussions of, like, are they still going to be in the European, like, economic area? For example, like, countries like Norway.
I think the most, like, complicated thing... of this Brexit thing, I'm not even, like, I don't even think that Brexit means that Britain will fail. I just think, like, the first couple of years, like, maybe even the first decades, are going to be so, especially, like, the first 10 years are going to be so confusing, because you have to do stuff that you've never done before, and, like, no, basically no generation that's still working has done those things before. Because Britain has been in the European Union for so long. So, like, negotiating trading deals with Europe, yeah, or, I don't know, applying for visas, for example, your artist to come to England, is going to be, like, a lot of people are going to, like, have to learn.
It's going to be completely new. And in some ways, maybe that could be a positive thing. Like, there could be better deals made in the art and culture sector. But on the flip side, looking at the current government, which doesn't really seem to, you know, take advantage of all this beautiful artistry, it's not looking like that's going to be the case. With the immigration and, like, the points-based system, it means that low-skilled workers, which quite often are artists, won't be able to enter the UK as easily as before.
Yeah.
Like, in my personal experience, I was 20 years old and I decided that I wanted to move to the Netherlands, and I moved to the Netherlands, and, like, I registered in Rotterdam and I paid for health insurance and that was it. And I didn't need to worry about it. Like, I didn't need to take any tests. And I was still classed as an expat instead of an immigrant, just because I'm white, you know? So I had a really easy ride. And it is worrying. Like, it's really scary to think that, you know, these possibilities aren't going to be there for people anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what worries me too, because I would to selfishly apply everything to myself. I would like to, like, move to Britain for a while, probably, for whatever reason. But that's the thing that I worry about, is, like, because it is such a difficult and complicated situation, like, applying for a visa, all that weird stuff, and then you have to pay yeah. for that visa, and you have to be, like, certain times of thing, like,
you what? Have to show a lot of proof of, yeah. like, how much you earn and what your intentions are. And I think we've just been really lucky, like, growing up with the, like, free movement in the European Union.
Yeah.
Because we've never had to deal with that, whereas, like, Americans have obviously had to deal with that quite a lot, like, if they're leaving America.
Yeah.
So, obviously, like, you're still going to be able to travel and stuff, but it does make it a bit more stressful.
It just makes it more complicated, and I think because...
And more expensive.
Yeah, and with Brexit, everything is just so foggy because it's not clear what's going to happen, and it's not clear how this thing is going to be structured, and no one has done it.
What's really scary as well is that museums and galleries are very dependent on this, like, flow of ideas, different kinds of artists, like, this international, especially I think more recently, like, institutions have really wanted to pitch themselves as international establishments, and they like to show artists from, like, all over the world. And, you know, Brexit is obviously going to create issues.
It's gonna make that definitely more difficult. So at school we do a lot with, like, globalization shit, like, we read a lot about that. And one really good point that they made in one of the classes that I had was that this international thing kind of, like, creates this one narrative. One type of, like, okay, so this is a famous artist, so we're all gonna show him, kind of, like, to keep on this topic of and they talked, like, specifically in that class, they talked about how it kind of erases how do you say,
what, like, a more local,
yeah, like, indigenous experiences,
culture,
yeah, they called it, yeah, indigenous experiences, or local experiences. Like, those things are also very important. And I think with Brexit, there is a big opportunity for that to be happening.
That's true. That's, like, a really big positive, where it could be the case that Brexit happens and this kind of isolation of the country kind of amplifies voices of, you know, British artists. And I don't mean, you know, white British artists necessarily, obviously.
Because, like, I think a lot of... It would be really interesting for a tape modern, for example, to look in the country and around itself to find, like, the next gem instead of programming the same internationally appreciated artist. I think that's something that I really dislike about globalization. But at the same time, there are galleries for local artists, obviously.
Exactly.
But it's more difficult to go from a local gallery to a big institution. And maybe there's some opportunity for Britain to actually then make these local voices also enter the big institutions. I don't know. That's something that I thought about. Like,
it's also like if you're holding out hope onto these institutions to kind of like, I don't know. I have low expectations for them to actually, you know, still be hiring like local artists and stuff like that. Like, I kind of expect that they're still going to be hiring the same kind of famous British artists or like famous American artists who can make a lot of money, because ultimately, like, they're just businesses and they do just want to make the most money. And also the levels of diversity in creators and shows currently in the UK, I would say, is fairly low already, even with UK being in the European Union. So it's kind of a bit scary to think what it's going to be like post-Brexit.
It's just weird. It's also so foggy. I mean, it's so unclear what's going to happen. And I kind of hope that the UK will take this as sort of this, like I said, opportunity to amplify voices from around them.
Yeah.
Because even like worker class Billy, who's white but a great artist, will most likely not, like, more likely than workers class someone else who's not white, but still will not be really likely to be in Tate Modern anytime soon. Exactly. And it would be nice.
And also, would they even want to be in Tate Modern?
You know? Also, yeah, true. Also, like, but that's the thing. Like, it has opportunities. I think Brexit has a lot of opportunities. I remember after the 2016 vote, everyone was just like, this was a protest vote, because no one also really knew what it was about.
Yeah. I mean, in 2016, that was the first year that I could vote. And I do remember feeling like there wasn't information clear on either side. I mean, there was like a general confusion of like what the European Union was. What is Europe? Like, what does all of this mean? And it was just basically fear-mongering tactics on either side, and like none of it was truthful, and no one knew what they were voting for. Yeah. And I think that's obviously why, I mean, the vote came out so
divided.
It was basically 50-50.
Yeah. I guess that's also like a problem I have, because I was part of this European program called Attend for Europe. At least the Dutch name was the Dutch translation for Attend for Europe. And it basically gave you this sort of propaganda, but not really that much propaganda, especially if you have a good teacher, about Europe and what the European Union is and how it works. And you were invited to come to the European Union as well and then get a tour and everything. So when I was 16, and I finished that program, I had a pretty good overview of what the European Union was and what it did and what its flaws were and all that stuff. And I think that worked for me in understanding what leaving or remaining would mean for Britain, you know?
Because I just wish there was more education on what was actually happening, because most people didn't know what they were voting for.
Yeah, and that sucks, because like it's unfair, and it's such a like tactic that a lot of politicians use, is like not giving all of the information. I hate that. I really dislike that. And now no one is certain what's going to happen. And I know, for example, like also a lot of curators or people working in the Netherlands are really confused about what's going to happen. It, like, living in that uncertainty is just not nice.
No, it's awful. Like, I was living in Rotterdam at the time, and I was, like, just eagerly awaiting more information because I didn't know if it meant that I could, if I couldn't study anymore, if it meant that my fee prices would change. And I was just, like, eagerly awaiting to get, like, a residence permit come through my door, and it was just a stress, and it was really hard living in this uncertainty and not knowing. Obviously, like, coronavirus has happened now, so that's a way bigger stress to take on to your shoulders. But at the time it was really stressful. And I do think about this, like, I wonder with Brexit, like, is there going to be a movement of UK-based creatives who just move to Europe? Because I've definitely considered it as well. Like, I'm definitely always thinking of, like, getting that green card marriage, getting my Dutch citizenship, and, like, getting, you know, the ability to travel around Europe and not have to stress about it so much. It is definitely, like, a worry, because I think a lot about myself moving to somewhere in Europe, or, like, having some, like, having my partner move from Europe to the UK. And you do then have to think, like, oh, am I going to have enough points for this system, which is obviously racist and classist and awful.
Yeah.
And I find it really funny, actually, when people from the UK will be like, oh, well, it's not racist. Like, we just want to be like Australia, and they have a points-based immigration system. And it's like, yeah, they're racist too. Like, that's also,
I mean,
terrible.
We've been knowing that Australia is racist, right? I mean,
they have a literal island which they put all of their, you know, immigrants on. Like, I mean, there's obviously this larger issue with immigration in general, and the attitude that most people from the UK have towards immigration is really awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the art world, like, in an art context, you need this kind of international openness, and there is this drive for collaboration, and it's really beautiful. And it's interesting, like, what's going to happen in context of Brexit, where it's easier to have those creative relationships elsewhere in other countries. Like, why bother coming to the UK, you know?
Yeah.
Especially because the UK has kind of been seen as, like, since, like, the 1960s or so, the UK became the new, like, top marketplace for art trading.
Yeah.
And it moved from Paris to London. So it's interesting, like, you know, is it going to move again, possibly? Because it's just not viable to have it in the UK anymore.
I listened to this podcast, which was from the Royal Academy in Britain.
In London?
Yes, that one. And they were talking about this stuff too. It was about Brexit and the art world. That's why I listened to it, because I was like, if we're going to talk about this, I need to know the deets. And what was, like, significant to me is how, like, arrogant, and, like, they really think shit's going to stay in, that this whole situation is going to stay in London. Because they were discussing how it might move to Frankfurt or to, which I think is actually could happen, or to Berlin or something, mainly Frankfurt. That was, like, the main point that they were talking about. And this one guy on the panel, it was a panel conversation also, and this one guy was just like, no, it's not going to move to Frankfurt because Frankfurt's just boring. And I was like, yeah, sure. But London was once boring as well. I mean, it's not like it has been a booming, cool city forever. Right? I mean, it was so much, like, because I expected this to be a podcast just about, or a panel conversation about arts in general in the UK with Brexit. And it was just constantly about London and how theater.
It was just like bigging up London.
Yeah, and at one point, they were like, "Yeah, so nothing is really going to change because look at how important theater, for example, is to London's economy." And I was like, "Yeah, but still."
This is what's interesting. Actually, the creative industry in the UK, I have an amazing fact here. It's actually the UK's fastest growing sector and per year generates around 80 billion.
Jesus so Christ.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
They're making a lot of money from it. And I think it'll be really interesting to see with Brexit, like, is the UK going to implement better regulations with in the creative sector? Because actually there's a potential for a lot of money there, but judging by, you know, the value that the Tory government places in the cultural sector, that's not looking hopeful, because it doesn't seem like it's really a priority to them.
No, but that's...
Which is weird, because on top of that, you've got just the economic, like, uncertainty of Brexit. Like, you don't... Like you were saying, like, it's just foggy. Like, no one knows what's going to happen, and no one really knows what they're discussing. And so you don't really know if they're going to... You know, the money that may be there, may not be there for the economy. Like, is that going to be invested in the arts or not?
I mean, that's also why, like, researching this podcast was such a complicated thing, because it's just not clear. There's no information out there on what's going to happen or how it's going to be shaped. I mean, I read something about, like, from a website called Dutch Culture. I don't even know who they are, but they're something Dutch.
Dutch Culture.
Yeah, and they read...
It's like racism and colonialization.
No, I think it's actually like about art and stuff. And,
okay, sorry. It's actually... Sorry, dutchculture.com.
Yeah, they're actually .nl.
Oh, .nl.
Oh, they actually have a really cool website. I will be looking into this
later. Okay, I'm sorry.
But... So they have this whole, like, cultural collaborations after Brexit, frequently asked questions, and it's, like, a long-ass page with, like, basically a whole explanation on what they are planning on doing when Brexit happens, or now that Brexit has happened, and what they have agreed on and continuing cooperation, and what do you have to do if you're cultural, like, working in the cultural field, and you're from the UK, or you're a Dutch citizen, and you want to go to the UK, how is this going to work? And it's just, like, super long, and I read it all, and to be honest, I didn't understand anything. I wasn't, like, I didn't feel like I got any wiser from reading this. I still was with so many questions.
I was, like, exactly the same when I was living in Rotterdam, like, checking on university, like, art school websites, reading about, like, what's gonna happen for me. I'm English and I'm living in the Netherlands, like, how does this affect me? And it's kind of like, yeah, we don't know. Like, that's the bottom line of it. It's just like, I don't know. So it's really hard to kind of, like, I don't know, it's really hard to have a discussion about it. And I guess that's kind of why I had a bit of a meltdown at the start of the podcast. But that's okay. Like, we're just accepting that we're in this time that's really hard and really difficult. And it's so hard to be an artist, like, full stop, because being an artist is just this constant, like, I never know if a project is finished.
Or if you're actually going to get paid.
Yeah. Just facing, like, constant...
Or if you're going to get a next project, like a next paid project. It's just hard, and it's okay to acknowledge the fact that it's hard. I mean, being privileged, acknowledging your own privilege doesn't mean that you're not allowed to complain about stuff. Yeah. And, I mean, it is unfair 9 out of 10 times, and the amount of times that I have had to do, like, unpaid labor or unpaid performances. I was actually almost about to do an unpaid performance this year under the guise of friendship. And...
No.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
Real friends, this is the top tip from this episode. Like, real friends will pay you for your labor.
Real friends
will pay you
for your labor. Oh, God.
That's Karl Marx.
Yeah. No, but also,
that's,
like,
in the Communist Manifesto.
Yes. You don't have to read it. We just gave you the best summary you have. You can get
spark notes. Yeah.
But like, honestly, I mean, you're hot, so you don't have to be upset about being an artist. And I do think that we should share a lot of local stories as well. I mean, I coined the sentence, in order to be an international player, you have to be a local hero.
Yeah, Hira loves that. That's like a claim to fame.
I don't love it. You guys confront me with it constantly. You and Mero were constantly confronting me with the fact that I came up with that sentence. Don't even lie about that. But I mean,
there's two kinds of people in this world. Local hero, international player. Yahira. That's the third one.
This thing makes no sense. You also have to, like, amplify local stories. And I think, like a lot of, like, institutions, because that was also something that they discussed in this panel, is a lot like, oh, yeah, now we have space to actually do local blah, blah, blah. But that's not really going to happen.
When I was researching for this podcast and reading articles, a big positive point that they were bringing up was this idea that now we could present in the art world an authentic view of UK culture, which to me, like, red flags. That was a bit fishy reading that, because I was like, what is an authentic view of the UK? Like,
and
what is UK culture? What does it mean to be British? Because honestly, from my perspective, like, the UK's art industry is so global, and like, it's culturally, the UK is just built up from like stealing from other cultures. So then what is British art? It's like all these things that we consider to be British are typically from other countries. Yeah, something else that I've been thinking about is like the impact of smaller galleries, like you were saying, like, you know, the galleries that are focusing on local artists and having these small shows and maybe a bit more grassrootsy, will these galleries be getting, you know, like, enough funding from the government to continue their work? Because, I mean, with all the economic uncertainty of like what's going to happen in the arts and culture sector, it's likely that all these like big institutions like the Tate will be getting the majority of the funding.
Yeah. A lot of smaller galleries won't continue to exist. Yeah.
And also organizations who work mostly with international artists will also struggle a lot, because a lot of these artists won't be able to get these like tier 5 visas to be able to come over into the country. I'm actually curious, like, who does actually qualify for these visas? We don't know. Basically, yeah. This whole podcast is just us bringing up points and then just being like,
I don't know.
Yeah. Because we don't know. And I don't think anyone does know. And, like, there's a certain level of just being like, yeah.
You
have to kind of be okay with the uncertainty. You got to, like, let the uncertainty sit with you and kind of slowly start to be okay with it, because otherwise you just go crazy. It's not very clear.
No.
I think I did read that the government in the UK are considering creating like a sort of visa specifically for creatives. So like people who are going to be on short-term engagements / contracts. But again, there's not much detail about that. So they haven't really, you know, this is happening in 2 months.
Yeah,
but this information is not online.
No,
it's not very clear, so nobody really knows. An issue that's also been affecting me at the moment and like my classmates is the idea of like study exchanges. We kind of discussed it earlier, because we're both students and we both, you know, would like to study in another country at some point. What's going to end up happening is that really only, you know, rich students from other countries can come to the UK, which is already an issue.
Yeah, so the rich stay rich and the poor stay poor. And not educated as well as they will want it to be. Yeah, it's going to be like a transition period of the transition period.
transition period of the transition period. That's just like my whole life.
Yeah, same.
Like me trying to work out who I am. Transition period. I'm in a transition period right now. So like if you're like, you know, a young artist and you're just trying to find your way, you know, your way around, like why are you going to come to the UK when it's so difficult and it's so expensive? Like it's just not, I'm really worried about, you know, I'm really worried about what's going to happen with the lack of international kind of creatives in the country. Because already on my course, like I'm studying in Glasgow and it's kind of amazing how most of the people on my course are from London, specifically London. Like there's not even that many Scottish people at my school.
Yeah, because people
and
from...
that's really weird to me.
Yeah, but I think that's also because like people in London have money.
Yeah, but this is the problem.
Yeah.
Basically, this whole podcast, I mean, the issue is, really
it's
here
money,
is that
yeah.
we are poor.
Yeah, everyone who's poor is being screwed over, and who voted for this? The poor people.
Exactly, because they were
misled.
They were told a false rhetoric, as is always the case.
But I mean, Remain would also fuck over poor people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, both sides would fuck over poor people. That's the horrible, horrible, sad truth about all of this.
Mm.
Poor people can never win.
More importantly, did you see Banksy's Brexit art?
Yes.
What did you think?
I hated it, of course. I hate everything. It was uninspiring. I mean, some of his work, I think, oh, that's cool, but this... it was just really uninspiring.
You didn't rate the one that said, like, vote love.
Yeah.
You're like speechless. You don't even know what to say.
Because it literally looks like an advertisement for, like, I don't know, a hospital. He makes stupid work. And it's just like, it's always so, it's just ugly and commercialized, and I'm just like, oh. And then everything he does is just, it's just boring. It's just
cringy.
Yes!
That's the biggest thing, though. I just see his work and I'm just like, cringe.
Yeah.
And then I see people who like his work and I'm also like, cringe.
I think that's like the worst. Like the fact that Banksy does it, I don't even care, you know? Like,
but it's the fact that
people
actively
that I know think that he's like changing the world and having great cultural commentary. First of all, they haven't listened to our podcast, which is way better cultural commentary without weird, ugly graffiti works. Second of all, this guy is just literally repeating things that everyone has been thinking or something that a kid drew online.
It's kind of like concepts that you'd write in your diary when you're 14.
Yeah.
Like, choose love. Not hate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just...
It's not radical.
And I think, like, the fact that he's doing that, whatever. Honestly, whatever. He has the right to do it. He can do whatever he wants. The fact that people are only interested in social problems whenever Banksy makes a boring artwork about it is so boring. That's so...
The Spoiled Broth does not support Banksy.
And he's not good! Sorry. Oh, he sucks!
The outrage.
Yeah, because like, oh my god, if the only way for you to care about something is because a middle-aged guy made some dumbass balloon with, oh my god, global warming or some shit like that, who cares?
Yahara and I considered doing a whole podcast on the reasons why we don't like Banksy. Which, to be honest, if there's anyone that's interested in hearing that, then let us know, because I'm happy to do it and I would love to research and like have a more fully formed statement on
opinion
it. Because right now it's just like a guttural, like it's like a very initial reaction to his work. It's just like, I don't like him and I don't like what he stands for and I just don't like him.
Same.
But I need the evidence, you know? I want to research this. I want to write a thesis on why Banksy sucks.
Yeah, same.
Should we do a joint thesis, like a dissertation?
Oh, God. No, I am... Yeah, we could. It would be interesting.
You have to channel the rage every day that you have towards Banksy and then put that into your daily life and just use it to fuel everything that you do. I need that as a mantra.
Yeah, maybe you should do that, girl. I mean, I was thinking, so Banksy's British. What will happen for Banksy when Brexit happens? Will he be able to...
Yeah, I hope they just kick him out of the country, you know?
I mean, will he be able to travel around the world and do just, like, his graffiti thingies? Yeah. Or does he have to apply for a visa now and then people will know who he is?
Banksy's gonna get a visa. I think he's gonna... I think everyone's gonna know who he is.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in the art world already knows who he is. I mean, like, high director... Like, directors. People in high functions, like, they know who he is. I mean, he's not... Like, he's not doing this for... He's not some radical guy who's doing this for free. That's my point.
No, he's doing it for the dollar.
Yeah, he's getting coin, and we're being... we're being led to believe that he's not doing it for...
Look at me, and I care about this stuff, and you guys don't.
Oh. But also, please give me the money. And also... I did contact the gallery that owns this wall and make sure that it was okay for me to graffiti on their wall. And they did pay me a lot of money.
Which, yeah, true. True! I try not to, like, get involved with Banksy. I ignore him basically every day of my life. I'm so, like, over that guy.
Two things that bring me a lot of distress. Banksy and Brexit.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
I think this podcast is coming to an end because we're too tired. We're
exhausted
after thinking about Brexit.
So many emotions. Banksy, but also how it is to be an artist.
Being an artist is just exhausting.
Yeah. Thinking about being an artist and everything that you have to do is just exhausting.
Which is essentially like what motivated us to make the podcast is just because we're tired.
We're being tired artists.
Being artists, and we're tired of the art world, and we're tired of the poor treatment of artists.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing.
Yeah. Obviously, my situation being an immigrant was quite different because I'm white and I was in like a predominantly white country. But at the same time, it was for me like really isolating in a lot of ways, and it was really hard for me to be able to get a job because I didn't speak the language. And in a lot of ways, like having, you know, being constantly in this environment where everyone speaks a different language and you don't know what's going on is really awful. And I chose like to put myself in that place. So I can only imagine the trauma of having to leave your home country and having to come to a new place and then having everyone hate you basically and being scapegoated as the demise of the country. Yeah, I think in summary, what we're just kind of leaving the episode on is kind of like the reminder that nobody is an island. Like at the end of the day, everybody is connected in some way, and art can connect us in many ways.
The Spoiled Broth was brought to you by Jemima Vaughn and Yahaira Brito Murphy. Our intro and outro jingle was made by Brian Murphy. And we want to thank everyone who advises us on making the podcast. Hope to see you next time.